Conference as we announce the figures for the third quarter 2021. Thank you for your interest, and we're glad that you're here. We've got the CEO of Bayer, Werner Baumann, as well as Wolfgang Nickl, who's our CFO of Bayer, and they will be presenting the most important operational developments to you now, and afterwards there'll be a Q&A. Before we begin, I'd like to draw your attention to, as a disclaimer, of all of our future-oriented statements, as well as the legal disclaimer. Please bear these in mind. And now I'd like to pass the floor on to Werner Baumann.
Meine sehr geehrten,
ladies and gentlemen, I too would like to wish you a warm welcome to today's conference call, and together with Wolfgang Nickl, I'll begin by summarizing the most important developments of the third quarter of 2021. In this quarter, we delivered strong operational performance with a significant increase in both sales and earnings. All divisions showed strong growth momentum. Our agricultural business posted exceptionally strong growth compared to the previous year's period, mainly due to volume and price increases in North America. And we're also seeing a good start to the season in Latin America. Our pharmaceuticals business also achieved strong growth, benefiting in particular from major gains for our ophthalmology drug, Eylea. Our consumer health division also posted very good sales figures in all regions product categories. Demand continued to rise, in particular for our nutritional supplements. Based on the good performance in the third quarter, we're today updating our 2021 guidance that we've already upgraded in August. And this confirms our good business performance. We've also made good progress with the launch and development of new products in the third quarter. At Crop Science, we launched a whole host of new products very successfully. We're talking, for example, about new soybean seeds in North America and Brazil, and crop protection innovations for maize cultivation. At Pharmaceuticals, we're seeing encouraging progress with our product launches and the further development of our pipeline. In the third quarter, we launched Kerendia in the United States. It's the first drug of its kind for patients with chronic kidney disease and type 2 diabetes. We've also obtained EU approval for Vacuvo, a product for the treatment of chronic heart failure, in the third quarter. This marks a further milestone in the global market launch of that product. We're also making progress well with our cancer drug, Nubeqa, which has achieved promising growth, especially in the United States. In addition, we've initiated a phase 3 trial in the continued product of elinzanetant, a product for menopausal women. We believe that all these medicines are candidates for blockbusters, each having a peak sales potential of more than €1 billion. In the third quarter, we also acquired the U.S. company Vividion. As a result, we are now in a position to develop novel chemical compounds that address target proteins that could not previously be addressed. This considerably strengthens our pharmaceuticals business with positive effects on numerous therapeutic areas. In addition, there's been some good news about Xarelto. The European Patent Office reversed a first-instance decision and maintained our patent on the most widely used once-daily administration of Xarelto until mid-January 2026, which is almost 2 years longer than previously anticipated. At the level of individual countries, the patent is still, of course, open to challenge. At Consumer Health, too, we launched additional innovations under the umbrella of our well-known product brands. One example is the global launch of Bepanthol-Derma, which was successfully advanced in several countries. At Bayer, however, we've also set ourselves highly ambitious sustainability goals that we're working on actively. Take climate protection, for example. As you know, we're committed to becoming carbon neutral in our own production operations by 2030. This means that by 2029, we'll reduce our own emissions by 42%. And I can also tell you that we're on track to meet our reduction targets for 2021. In addition to investments in more efficient facilities and building technologies, we're also extensively harnessing renewable energy sources. As of the end of the third quarter this year, we have concluded agreements covering about 400,000 megawatt hours of green energy. As part of the LEAF Coalition, in addition, we've worked together with governments, non-governmental organizations, and other companies to mobilize more than $1 billion worldwide to protect rainforests in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. This means that our endeavors are helping to ensure that the goal of the ongoing Global Climate Summit, ending global deforestation, can be achieved. As we've already outlined, we're also aiming to improve access to family planning, especially in low- and middle-income countries. As part of this commitment, we've recently announced plans to build a new production facility in Costa Rica and to expand our existing plant in Finland. Both sites are set to produce long-acting reversible contraceptives in the future. Sustainability targets to provide 100 million women with access to modern contraception by 2030, and to achieve that, these investments totaling 400 million euros in Costa Rica and Finland are a real milestone. Innovation, performance, and sustainability. These are the cornerstones of our company's long-term alignment. I'll come back to this again in a moment, but first of all, I'd like to hand over to Wolfgang Nickl, who will take you through the third quarter figures and the outlook for the full year 2021. Yes, thank you, Werner. From me too, welcome everybody to today's conference call, and I'll come to the figures for the complete group before I move on to the business performance in the individual divisions. And please note, when I talk about sales growth, I'm always talking about figures adjusted for currency and portfolio effects, unless explicitly stated otherwise. In the third quarter, Bayer achieved double-digit growth in both sales and earnings in the third quarter. Sales grew by 40% to 9.8 billion euros, and all three divisions contributed to this encouraging performance. Our earnings KPI, clean EBITDA, advanced by 16% to 2.1 billion euros, while the clean EBITDA margin came in at 21.4%. Core earnings per share increased by 30% from 81 cents to 1.05 euros. This is driven primarily by the strong earnings performance of Crop Science. Free cash flow advanced by nearly 60% compared to the previous year to just under 2 billion euros. That is the figures for the divisions, and I'll begin with the agricultural business. Business in the Crop Science division expanded significantly in the third quarter, with sales up by 26% to 3.9 billion euros. The seed and trays business registered particularly strong gains here. In North America, this is mainly due to lower product returns compared to the prior year quarter, as well as higher license revenues. In South America, the business benefited in seed and trays business from higher prices and volumes, and also from the launch of a new corn tray. Herbicides business expanded as a result of higher prices, especially in North America. Clean EBITDA Crop Science came in at 471 million euros in the third quarter, compared to minus 34 million euros in the same period of 2020. During this quarter, good performance was able to offset the increase in the goods sold and the higher research and development investments. Regarding the glyphosate litigations in the USA, I'd like briefly to point to the five-point plan, which we provide specific information about this summer. We're making good progress, and then some of the US Supreme Court will decide whether to hear the Hardeman case for review. A positive outcome in the coming year would then effectively end the litigation. In the event of a negative outcome, we've already made an additional provision of $4.5 billion before taxes and discounting in the second quarter to cover possible long-term risks. That's what we'd already communicated. That brings me to our pharmaceuticals division. Sales of pharmaceuticals climbed in the third quarter to around 4.5 billion euros, which corresponds to a growth of 7%. This was driven particularly by Eylea, the ophthalmological medication, and in all regions, the business with ophthalmology drug expanded significantly, with sales up by nearly 20% overall. In a growing market, we captured market share. Also, thanks to the continuing commercialization of Eylea, pre-filled syringes. In particular, business continued to recover from the COVID-19 restrictions, especially in Europe. Sales of our anticoagulant Xarelto grew by 4%, largely thanks to expanded volumes in Russia and Germany. In China, the business with Xarelto declined due to falling prices. We've seen encouraging process with the progress of the market launches of Nubeqa and Vevuca, which Van has already mentioned. In the third quarter, we also achieved the first sales of our new medication, Kerendia, which was approved in July in the United States. Clean EBITDA at pharmaceuticals came in the third quarter at 1.4 billion euros, which is about 10% lower than the previous year's period. That was due to increased research and development investments, including in the area of cell and gene therapy. Then there was the market launch of new products, which also led to an increase in expenditure. We were able to maintain a strong pace of growth and business with over-the-counter products. Even compared to a very strong period in the previous year, business expanded across all regions and product categories, and overall sales of consumer health rose by 11% to 1.3 billion euros. The most important driver for growth in nutritionals was categories increased by 20%. Pain and cardio also achieved substantial growth of 17%, and this was partly attributable to a product line extension for Aleve. In the cold and allergy category, sales increased by 7%. In the previous year, the COVID-19 measures led to a decline in business there. Clean EBITDA at Consumer Health rose by 2% to 308 million euros. High investments in innovation and product launches held back the earnings. Now let's move on to our guidance for the full year 2021. After the second quarter, we raised our guidance in August. After the second quarter and following the strong performance third quarter, we can update our guidance once again. We're now anticipating stronger growth at our crop science and consumer health divisions, while our pharmaceuticals guidance remains the same. As a result, we're now expecting group sales growth adjusted for currency and portfolio effects of around 7% instead of 6% previously. On the slide, you can see the outlook for our financial KPIs with different assumptions regarding currency effects. You'll notice that with the core earnings per share, we've also slightly raised our forecast. We're now expecting a better free cash flow because part of the payments to settle the glyphosate litigations are now set to be made in 2022 instead of 2021. In the agricultural business, we've had a successful start to the season in Latin America and are now preparing for the 2022 season in North America. Our U.S. production facility in Luling, Louisiana, was out of commission for around 5 weeks due to Hurricane Ida. The plant is now back up and running and is operating at full capacity, and we expect that the negative effect of the production stoppages will be largely offset by the positive growth momentum that crop science will continue to see in the fourth quarter. In the pharmaceuticals division, we're also expecting to meet our forecast. Despite the pressure on price in China, we continue to anticipate stable growth for Xarelto. And for Eylea, we are expecting sales growth in mid to high teens in percentage terms this year. At Consumer Health too, we are also back on track to deliver on a strategy and aim to grow in all cancer regions and consumer health. However, the situation remains somewhat volatile in our cough and cold business, which we monitor closely because we need to watch out for the effects of COVID-19. And with that, back to Werner. Thank you, Wolfgang. As you can see, our third quarter performance shows that we're heading in the right direction. This applies both to the operational development and to the market launch of new products. This ability to invest in scientific research and develop innovations has always been Bayer's lifeblood, and that is still the case today. We've aligned our corporate strategy and therefore our innovation potential towards these systemic sectors of health and nutrition. In doing so, we are looking to help solve a question of fundamental importance, namely, how, in the time of climate change, do we feed and satisfy the healthcare needs of a growing population? This question is just as relevant as it is topical. It is one of the issues that is being discussed at the moment at the World Climate Summit in Glasgow. There, we can see a growing number of countries making specific commitments to become carbon neutral in the coming decades. It's a development that our company welcomes. We can't be sure what outcome the negotiations will bring in Glasgow over the next few days, but I do hope this opportunity is seized upon by a large group of countries to join together a kind of climate club that will define clear objectives and necessary action. In view of all the specific steps to take on the long journey towards carbon neutrality, it's clear that new technologies will be vitally important. What we need, quite simply, is more progress and more openness to innovation. I think that time is right for that. Firstly, because at present we're seeing an enormous advance in science. And secondly, because we need to act rapidly. And thirdly, because with the COVID-19 vaccines, we are currently all experiencing the value of research and development for society in a tangible way. And this is an experience which, especially in Europe, we should be able to carry over to other technologies. At Bayer, we're working together with our partners on a number of projects involving new technologies that can add real value for society. Take fertilizer, for example. Nitrogen fertilizers today are used to grow about 40% of the world's food, but they also account for about 4% of all greenhouse gases. We therefore need alternatives. Via our LEAPS unit, we have invested in a number of biotech startups which are harnessing various technologies in the research on microbial engineering. If it works, then as the middle of this decade, it would be possible for more crops to effectively fertilize themselves, and that would be really good news for the climate. Or take, as a second example, Parkinson's disease. Currently, there are two different approaches to treat the nervous system disorder, which are in clinical phase 1 trials. In both cases, these are completely novel therapies. There's a cell therapy and a gene therapy. Parkinson, at present, is an incurable disease, and no real progress has been made in it for decades. If we could achieve a breakthrough here, it would be a groundbreaking innovation for millions of patients. Those are just two of the long-term innovations we're researching. We're investing in the future with more than 13,000 researchers who, day in, day out, go about their work with great dedication. With more than 5 billion euros that we invest in research and development every year, and with the countless partnerships that we engage in throughout the world. Many of our specific projects nowadays are centered on what experts refer to as the bio-revolution. By that, they mean the significant progress in the field of cells and genes that's being accelerated exponentially by artificial intelligence and the digital transformation. Bayer is better positioned than any other company to harness the innovation potential of the bio-revolution in the fields of health and nutrition. And we shall continue to work tirelessly to make that happen. Ladies and gentlemen, as you will have seen yesterday, there was not just a press release on the third quarter this morning, but also one relating to some personnel news. After more than 30 years at Bayer, Liam Condon decided to pursue a new career challenge, and I'd like to wish him all the best and every success in that endeavour. I'd like to thank Liam most sincerely for the many years of trustful collaboration we've shared. Liam has been of great service to Bayer, and at the end of the year, we shall give him appropriate send-off. He'll be succeeded by Rodrigo Santos, a renowned expert with more than 25 years of industrial experience. He will take over the Crop Science Division as of the 1st of January 2022 and to take over Liam Condon's seat on the Board of Management as well. I'm looking forward to working with him in future. Thank you for your attention. Now we look forward to taking your questions.
Werner Baumann.
Thank you very much to both Werner Baumann and Wolfgang Nickel. So, ladies and gentlemen, you may now ask your questions, and I'll give the floor back to Ms. Ernst now. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to start with the Q&A session now. To register a question, press 9 and asterisk on your telephone. You will get a system response that we've received your request and that you are now in the waiting list to ask questions. Please bear in mind that by pressing the 9 and asterisk buttons again, you will be withdrawing your question. And the first question comes from Jonas Jansen from the FAZ Daily. You have the floor. Good morning. Thank you very much. I would be interested, Mr. Baumann, you touched on this in your remarks, the effect of COVID-19 vaccinations. Bayer had planned something with CureVac as well, but now that's not going to pan out. So my question is, what sort of planning do you have in Wuppertal? Are you likely to work together with other manufacturers? Might there be some other option in this regard, or what the plan is here?
Yeah, good morning, Jansen.
Good, Mr. Jansen. Thank you for the question. We have worked hard, especially in view of the emergency situation last year, when the pandemic was in full swing, to see whether we could also produce. And then we set all the levers moving to set up production capacity in a very short time. But because of the fact that CureVac, filed the motion for approval for the phase one trials for the CureVac vaccine and then withdrew the application, the establishment of vaccine production for Wuppertal at present has no basis. So these activities have been discontinued. Nevertheless, in addition, we have hired more staff who are now in Wuppertal, the newly hired employees in Wuppertal, where we have about 3,000 employees, are being used for other purposes.
And the next question is from the Handelsblatt, Ben Freundhoff. Good morning to everyone. I've got three brief questions following on to the question we just had here. Are you continuing to work with CureVac? I've understood that production isn't going to get off the ground, but you were involved with the clinical trials and with the approvals. Are you still a partner of CureVac, or is that over? Second question. Where is Rodrigo Santos going to work to? Is he going to move to Monheim, or is he going to stay in St. Louis? And then in your quarterly report, there is case action in the U.S. regarding Capital Communication. What is the legal situation there, and how does Bayer assess this class action?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, Frontov. Thank you for the question. Well, the first question, we are still interested in the mRNA technology and are also continuing our discussion with CureVac. However, at present, the collaboration has now ended and support for a possible call for tenders and the distribution, if there were to be some production, there is no basis for contractual collaboration. Regarding Rodrigo Santos, he will maintain his global division responsibility for agriculture, and part of his tasks on the Board of Management will be handled from St. Louis. But as in the past, we shall continue with two headquarter sites, one with the well-known situation in Monheim and the other in St. Louis. Now, for that, you need to know that all in all, about 70% of our agriculture's business is achieved in North and Latin America. But regarding the global responsibility of the headquarters site in Monheim, nothing has changed. regarding the class action in the United States. This was the Hausman Trust. In the securities class action that you're referring to, we are still in the phase of establishing whether it's admissible. In the first assessment, the court has turned down all the accusations apart from one, and that is what we're arguing about before the court at present. A brief has been filed to make it clear that we find all the motions unfounded.
The next question is from Hendrik Geisler from the Leverkusener Anzeiger. You have the floor. Good morning to everyone. I'm interested in power consumption at Bayer. How much green power do you have at the moment? I'd also be interested in knowing whether or not Bayer has brought some sections of the group back to Leverkusen, and which ones were they, and which ones are in planning. And then over a year ago, you were looking at considering letting people go in certain fields. You announced this for 2021. I wondered how many of the 12,000 employees that were let go in, or it was communicated that you were going to be letting 12,000 people go in 2018. How many have actually been let go? And through the austerity measures that you've put in place in the last 2 years, where have you released people and where not in the last 2 years?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Geisler. I didn't understand your second question acoustically. Could you repeat it, please?
Yes. I'm interested in whether or not Geyer has relocated people in recent years and divisions to Leverkusen, and whether more are planning to relocate.
Yeah, alles klar. Also ich,
right, now it's clear. So I'll answer the first and third question. The second question will be answered by Wolfgang Nickel. So for this year, we have purchased additional green electricity amount of 400,000 megawatt hours, which is about 12% of our total electricity consumption, if I've got the figure right in my mind. Regarding the structural measures that we announced in the context of the Bayer 2022 program, these are 12,000 employees. Well, in fact, there's been a net reduction in the course of the year of 8,000 posts, but at the same time, we have hired and acquired. So the programs were always designed for this purpose, of supporting innovation and growth in the transformation of the company. So parallel to that, there's also been a reinvestment and further build-up of employment of sustainable jobs. This program will be continued until the end of 2021, when it will be completed on plan. The programs that we announced last year, a savings volume of about 1.5 billion euros by 2024, present, this is under discussion in some divisions, but and is in the course of implementation others. But we don't have any overall personnel figures to announce here, because many divisions and sectors are affected differently. Many are shifting resources around, and that is an ongoing process that we shall see over the next few years. Therefore, there's no up-to-date news, but one further piece of information regarding employment in Germany. Workforce in the course of the year has remained more or less stable. Altogether, there's been a variation compared to the 1st of January of about 180 jobs in Germany. Now, the tax question, Wolfgang, yes, there are no major groups and sections have been moved to Leverhausen, and none are planned either.
And the next question is from Tim Lowe from the Bloomberg News, Munich. Hello, good morning. I've got two questions. The first is about sustainability. You mentioned that a bit already, but I remember at the annual general meeting, the UN Global Compact was an issue. And if I'm not mistaken, they voted against this. I wanted to know if there was an update on this, whether Bayer is still against this, and if that's the case, what are the reasons for this? And what does Bayer need to do in order to fix this?
Yeah, good morning, hello.
Good morning, Mr. Lowe. I think it is a question of whether Bayer should be a member of the Global Human Contract or not. And I said, like no other company worldwide, with the subjects of global nutrition, sustainable nutrition, and health, Bayer is making progress and driving, and it is a systemic company. There are many sectors where the sustainability goals that we formulate up to the end of 2030, and they are all fully on track. First of all, you've got the 5 degrees target for the climate, Paris Climate Convention, and sustainability requirements of the United Nations, the UN SDGs. And regarding relevance and the access to our company, perhaps this one piece of information, as you know, some people 30 or 40 years ago considered the subject of sustainability was going to be one of the major societal challenges. Prince Charles, specifically, heads a very big sustainability initiative, the Sustainable Market Initiative, that's called, and there are not many companies that are invited there to participate in task forces. Bayer is one of them.
The next question is from Christian Hatzner from Fortune. You have the floor. Good morning. Thank you. Just two questions, if I may. Regarding crop science, are you expecting further price increases for your various products in Q4 and in 2021? And secondly, in a conversation with a colleague in Glasgow, the head of Yara said that we are heading for a food crisis because of the fertilizer prices increasing by a factor of 10. Would you agree, and how do you see the situation in agriculture? Thank you.
Yeah, good morning, Edna.
Mr. Edna, thank you for that question. I hope you understand that I can't say anything about fertilizer prices because we don't work in that sector. As far as our business is concerned, our price increases, of course, have led to substantial cost increases, which we have to bear as well. They apply to us, as we've seen in the course of the year. This is due, first of all, because the unexpectedly fast rise in demand, and at the same time, not really at the same time, the obtaining the capacities, which are not available at the same time in many of our supplier markets, where the great demand couldn't be served appropriately, and that is why we've seen price increases there. With our customers too, we can see considerable increases in their sales prices. So the prices for soya and maize fertilizer have been increased significantly in the course of last year, and since the fourth quarter of 2021. It's been going on. So our customers at present have an excellent economic position, and we have to say that because of the high investments in research and development, in our production network, product security and safety and so on, we have to pass on the costs. We have done that increasingly. There is still a bit of a time lag. As a rule, we react to cost increases and an increase in commodity prices, and then we follow the system that we have a price policy oriented to added value. So the added value that our product creates will also be paid for by the customer. We saw that in the course of the year. There are very different developments in price in different markets and with different customers as well. In the last 2 years, 1.3 billion euros have been lost in terms of currency in international markets. Brazil is a major driver here. to the extent possible, we increase our prices, especially for products that are imported into Brazil, so that at the end of the day, the currency losses can be partially compensated for. In addition, in the commodity markets, there is a certain price and product bottleneck, and a major product here will be glyphosate. In the course of the year, we've seen several price increases. We ourselves have also raised our prices because the Chinese production has dropped significantly. And for the third quarter, not yet, but for the fourth quarter, we're expecting a considerable reduction in product availability because of Hurricane Ida and the fact that our production site in Luling was affected. On that basis, in a commodity price-orientated market, we then see further price increases for glyphosate.
And the next question comes from Annette Becker from the Börsenzeit on Düsseldorf. You have the floor. Yes, good morning. I've got a question, too, about the special influences of nearly 7 million euros. And most of this go to restructuring measures. And in the third quarter, this was, again, a real chunk. So what's planned for the fourth quarter? What can we expect, probably in connection with the savings of 1.5 billion euros?
Hello, Frau Becker.
Hello. Ms. Becker, Wolfgang Nickel here. Yes, you're right. The greater part of the special items in this quarter came from restructuring. It is simply connected to the fact that planning for the program which we announced last year is advancing. Plans becoming more precise, and that is discussed at length with our colleagues from the employee side, and when measures are decided on, then according to the accounting rules, the provisions have to be put into the books. All in all, we said that the factor of special items would be about 1.7 times the savings, and we don't have any special separate forecast for the next quarter, which is connected with when the agreements are reached.
And the next question comes from Olaf Storbeck, Financial Times. You have the floor. Yes, hello to everyone. I've got a question as well regarding the Crop Science Division. The press release suggested that Liam Condon was leaving of his own requirements, and he had a contract until 2026. Can we assume that if he's going because he wants to go, that he's not going to be paid out then for the rest of the contract? I'd like to know more about that. And then another question. In May, he was appointed to CEO. Was it already clear that there was going to be this change, or was it a surprise?
Yeah, good morning, Herr Storb.
Good morning, Mr. Schulbeck. Yes, thank you for those questions. The first question, assumption I can confirm, Liam requested, at his own request, to terminate his position on the board at an early stage. He is turning to a new professional challenge, and therefore there's no reason at all to pay the remaining term of his contract. Other questions I have to answer at the end of the supervisor board's meeting, and I can only say what the supervisor decided was the board of management, as a rule, isn't involved in these issues, and we're not competent for it either. Regarding Rodrigo Santos, the situation is, and this is what you expect of the leading crop science company in the world. We've got the top people and the top expertise in the company, and depending on the challenges that arise in business and what opportunities become apparent, there are different personnel profiles that are appropriate for heading the divisions. The supervisory board, which is responsible here too, has conducted a selection process. The board of management is involved insofar as Of course, we are developing a talent basis, and there are future candidates that we want to develop for roles in the board of management. I can say that Rodrigo was at the top of the candidates list in the past.
And the next question comes from Antje Hoenig of the Bayerischer Post. You have the floor. Thank you very much. I've got one question. 135,000 actions, and how many have actually been settled? And then questions to COVID. You were considering a good citizen required mandatory vaccination in the U.S. How far are you there? And then regarding home office, how many of your, or what percentage of your employees are back in the office, and do you expect with the fourth wave more to be sent home?
Yeah, good morning for you.
Good morning, Ms. Hooning. Thank you for your questions. At present, there are no new figures for the number of suits. You know that on the one hand, we are still negotiating over settlements, also in the context of the program we've communicated, and we're working on all the 5 points regarding the filing of our appeal as well, the appeal to the Supreme Court, and that is the next important milestone where we're expecting a decision possibly in the fourth quarter, otherwise in the first quarter 2022. Regarding compulsory vaccinations, there are different possibilities in different countries. Vaccinating the workforce, enforcing that such a vaccination. For us as a science-based company, of course, because of the massive evidence of hundreds of millions of people who've been vaccinated in the meantime, we have an expectation which has not existed with so many drugs in such a short time. We can see that there are major risks of illness. Here, vaccination is the better solution, and we're communicating that to our organization, and we're encouraging our people to be vaccinated. We cannot enforce vaccination in many sectors, though there is a certain enforcement, especially where we ourselves are in the health sector and are working with our colleagues in sales and diagnostics and radiology with our technicians, and where we go to hospitals. There we need to ensure that the medical and nursing staff, and of course also people being treated as inpatients, are not put at risk by our employees who need to be vaccinated. And the next point in this connection is that, of course, we want to see that in some sectors where the vaccination ratio is not so high, by talking to people, we can want to increase that figure to protect our workforce, both individuals and colleagues, and also the private environment. Apart from the fact that, of course, we respect people who reject vaccination for health, religious or health reasons, there, our position is quite clear. I believe that everyone should be vaccinated, full stop. Next point, home office. Here, again, the situation differs from one site to another. In the course of our security and safety concepts, we've taken every possible precaution in the different phases to ensure that we only have the minimum number of people in the offices. We have very few people in the office sometimes. Wolfgang, Nick, and I can say that because we're here every day, and we can see it in Leverkusen. In the meantime, in Leverkusen and most of the other office sites in Germany, we have a ratio of about 60% of the workforce in office jobs who are being represented, and we're heading in this direction, also with the aim of having a social exchange between colleagues, particularly young colleagues who are new to the firm and who now need to get to know what it's like working together. And of course, we are looking at hybrid models as well, partially working from home and partially in the office, depending on their activities.
And the next question comes from Wolf von David, DPA. You have the floor. Yes, thank you. Good morning. Once again, just to ask about Wuppertal, how many people had you hired for the vaccination production that was planned? And how are you going to be using the premises then for what activities? And the next question, you said you're still interested in the mRNA technologies and still in discussion with CureVac. Could you tell us a bit more about that? You're interested in getting involved in manufacturing vaccinations moving forward, or are we talking about other possible mRNA drugs, or what are we talking about here? And the discussion with CureVac, I don't entirely understand it. What is there left to discuss? I mean, surely this issue has been basically dealt with. Thank you.
Yeah, good morning, Afandi.
Good morning, Mr. Davids. Thank you for your questions. I'll begin with CureVac and the employees who supported CureVac or are supporting CureVac. The situation is, in the course of the year, we had several hundred employees in terms of man years who were involved in supporting CureVac, where we're looking at, we took them out of less time critical projects. And we then asked these people to give priority, in some cases 24/7, to turn to the question of setting up vaccine production or to provide support for the approval process for the approval application for the CureVac vaccine. In Wuppertal itself, 30 employees were hired in addition, and as I've mentioned, they are being used for other purposes now. We have no strategic interest and no real basis, quite honestly, in the field of vaccines to establish our own presence. It has always been designed and intended such that in a critical global health crisis, with our skills and expertise, we can provide support. As far as CureVac is concerned, this support is no longer needed. And in addition, we are not pursuing any strategic goals in the field of vaccine technology. Regarding the discussion with CureVac and other mRNA technologies and mRNA companies, the mRNA technology, of course, has seen massive success in the field of vaccines and has given the proof of concept so that it is a new technology that is conceivable in the field of pharmacological active agents. This means that the mRNA technology in those fields where we have strategic interests can still be considered, and we're looking for further partnerships. Our priorities at present are fixed on cell and gene therapy, and in addition, precision chemistry with the acquisition of Novidian. But of course, mRNA is a highly interesting technology in some of the sectors that you mentioned. Of course, in oncology and in cardiology as well, but also in ophthalmology. These are fields which we find really exciting and where we could use this technology as well.
The next question comes from Patricia Weiss from Reuters. You have the floor. Good morning. Just a brief question to Mr. Nicholas. Over the course of the year, you haven't said much about the EBITDA, or there have been forecasts for EBITDA with special items. Now, if we do the math with the EBITDA margin, we could figure it out, but I'd just like to hear from you in terms of absolute figures with the clean result of 10.6 to 10.9 billion euros in the year as a whole, and that's currency adjusted. You said 10.5 and 11.5 as a forecast. Perhaps you could give us a sense of this, please.
Thank you for the question, Ms. Weiss. I'll sum up again what we said altogether. First of all, of course, there's been an encouraging development in Q3, which is continuing, and that is why the growth forecast for crop science and consumer health has been increased 2% for crop science and consumer health, also about 2%. We've always said that sales are looking at about 43 billion. You can imagine that the figures today, of course, are bigger than they were before. We entered the year with expecting 26% EBITDA margin, and in August that was reduced to 25%, and now we're somewhere in between. Where there's been a slight adjustment is in the core EPS. There, in August, we raised it to 6 euros to 6.20, and that has now been raised by 10 cents for our guidance. And the higher sales will lead to a higher margin as well. And what's important is that there's an improvement in the free cash flow, about 1.5 billion better, which is due partly to the postponement of settlement payments to the following year, which puts us in a position that the Davidian acquisition was consumed without any influence on the net financial debt as of the end of the year, and that I find most encouraging. So I think all the coordinates have been shown to show what we've adapted.
And the next question comes from Eric Butterbord, WDR-TV. You have the floor. Thank you. I've got a question on the about the austerity program that was announced in December 2018. Some of these questions have already been answered, but one question to you, Mr. Baumann. You talked about 8,000 positions that have been finished, or people have been let go. How many of those were in Leverkusen?
Good morning, Herr Butter.
Good morning, Mr. Butterbrot. Thank you for the follow-up question. The headcount and adjustment figures haven't been broken down to different sites.
I'm sorry, there was a technical problem there. Thank you very much to Mr. Baumann, Mr. Nickel, and thank you for everyone for joining us. Thank you for coming. We have no further questions. Please try and stay healthy. Thank you.